Hello, America, and to all of our listeners around the world. If the bombs haven't fallen yet, then you're listening to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. Topical comedy!
Joy.
I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. As always, of course, that's a lie. Joining me is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Announce your existence Hello. To the world. Make sure folks know we haven't burned in nuclear fire yet.
Nope, still alive. For now.
For now.
I'm pretty sure when that happens, they'll figure it out themselves.
Yeah.
So this episode is going to be for April 13th, 2017. Some shit has totally gone down in the world, and more serious shit than usual. Not only have we apparently lugged a bunch of missiles at Syria, we're apparently sending a flotilla of warships off the Korean Peninsula, where at the same time the People's Liberation Army from China have set themselves up at the North Korean border.
Yeah.
So
we need to get a satellite image of this so we can superimpose a Brazzers logo in the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not going to go well.
Yeah. All I'm going to say is, I hope you ain't too fond of Kim Jong-un, because his ass is grass.
Yeah.
Him and that whole...
But who cares?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, it's actually the 14th, not the 13th. I apologize.
It's okay.
Anyway, obviously we're going to be talking about some topical stuff. We have a celebrity death to cover. Some weird shit went down with X-Men Gold. You'll have to just listen to us explain it, because it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Also, Burger King kind of screwed themselves when they tried to hijack people's Google Homes, and that's just so funny. And of course, we got some trailer roundups and all that and more on this amazing pre-nuclear episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I finished Kevin Mitnick's The Art of Deception. About three-quarters of that book is basically anecdotes of his exploits. His and his friends, but the names and places have been changed to protect the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
I know this because I also read his autobiography where he just tells everything.
So, yeah,
yeah.
So I think the this book came out first, didn't it?
Yeah, this came out first. This was
this the one when he was still in jail or after he was released?
Well, this was after his release. It was during his supervised release. So yeah.
So basically, his probationary period.
Yeah, yeah. So that happened during that time, and it's decent. I mean, it's a lot of the same information, and the last quarter of the book is basically a roundup of security policies that companies can implement and why. It's a little dated at this point, but it's still good information, and yeah, it's good to know. It's just very, very dry. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but glad I read it. It was fun, but. After Ghost in the Wires, it was a little bit meh.
Yeah, well, you have to remember the time period it was written in.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of had to fudge some of the details because, I mean, like I said, he was under his supervised release, and
yeah,
there were some.
I'm guessing some other people were pending trial.
Yeah. Also, there were just some strings attached to. Those first few months, those first, like, that first year or so.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I heard somewhere that, like, for the first few months of his release, he basically could not touch a computer.
Yeah. It's like, he was basically, to write the book, he was going to use one of those old-fashioned word processors and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then his probationary officer says, just use a freaking computer. Just don't tell anybody.
This is painful to watch.
Yeah. So that's what they ended up doing. So now I have, he has one other book or two other books maybe that I haven't gotten around to reading, so I'll probably end up with those at some point. And other than that, I've been buying some vinyl on Discogs, because I need to. Uh-huh. This is the thing that has to happen. I was after the first Journey album, so found a guy in Canada.
The self-titled one?
Yeah. So found a guy in Canada that had a near-mint copy for $8. So it's like, okay, well, it's going to cost me $14 of shipping, so I figure why not see what else he has in his shop. And ended up with a copy of the Alps Parsons Project, iRobot, a copy of Styx, Grand Illusion. And the one that cost me the most out of that was a Friday Music release of Kansas album Mask.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a fantastic album. And when I saw a $30 price on that, I was like, ooh. But then I looked around for it. It's like, that's going for $60. So, yeah, I'll take that.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I'm hoping to get those this week and enjoy Mask, because that's like one of my favorite Kansas albums, and it has like one of my favorite songs of all time on there, and that being Icarus, Born on Wings of Steel.
Uh-huh.
It's a fantastic song. And I'm still waiting for those other four albums I ordered the other day, so I checked in with Mark at Funky Moose, and he says he's getting his shipment in on Monday, so should be going out Tuesday, so. It's all good there. Other than that, well, I've been doing that thing with the site. Yeah, working on that.
Yeah.
managed to lock myself out of my own installation, but I got that sorted out. So
yeah.
Just
for those of you who don't know, we're currently in the process of updating the site onto some make it look more modern.
Yep.
Less live journally.
Yeah. Yeah, this will definitely look more modern.
Less Blogspot.
Yeah.
It may be terraforming for some bigger things to come.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I know about this particular template that we're going to be working with, it's got a lot of options. So it should be very flexible for us to be able to do just about anything that we want to do. So
we're going to look like a legit site.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hooray.
Now,
hookers and cocaine, here we come.
And to go along with that, we also ended up joining Open Critics. So, that's a thing that happened. It's weird. Wasn't that the organization that ended up spawning out of Gabergate?
I'm not sure.
No.
I think we weren't they around before that?
I think they probably set up around the same time, but I don't think they were necessarily on the quote-unquote ethics in games journalism.
Yeah.
They're actually interested in ethics and games after going after the brash game stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
because when you sign up, they definitely point out, "Hey, here's the ethics in journalism requirements that we expect you to follow if you're going to join the list."
Yeah.
It's like I looked it over. It's like, yeah, we don't do any of that shit. So, so we had no problems to worry about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yes, I can 100% guarantee anybody who's listening who goes on Smashpad, no, we are 100% independent. We do not get any corporate funding or any kind of kickbacks. Any review you see is 100% our opinion.
Yeah.
Which is why
if we don't have anything that's like sponsored, we'll mention it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any codes we get from publishers, we mention it with a review.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff.
Yep. So, that's all good. And, that's been pretty much my week. How about you, Pat?
All right, what about you, Pat?
Oh, so ordinarily I try to kind of avoid bringing heavier stuff onto the podcast. In the past, it's kind of been alluded to about the problems I've had with my legs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the first episode that we did with Richard Wood, when I talked about waking up and having my right knee basically exploded,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better word. And this goes back a little further. I mean, these are this is stuff that's been going on in one form or another, off and on, for probably a good 6 years at this point.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's manifested in really particular ways. That problem is, by the time I actually felt well enough and able enough to get to a doctor about it, it had cleared up, and like one of them thought it was a rash, so I didn't really get to. I haven't really gotten medical attention for it in a form that would be described as active.
Comprehensive.
So, yeah. And this has been going on off and on for a number of years, like I said. One night, and I was actually going to bring this up on a show late last year, but then everything happened with Walmart and everything, and I lost my benefits there when I quit, and it's just been a whole mess. But one night I was playing Final Fantasy XIV, and a new patch had dropped. And I'm not drunk off my ass, but I'm definitely comfortable. And so I'm sitting there, I'm doing one of these new boss fights, and this one in particular involves a status effect called Dropsy. And I'm just sitting there, Dropsy, that's a funny word. Mm-hmm. I'd heard it before in the past and everything. I just kind of laughed about it and, you know, went on, finished the dungeon and everything. I was drunk enough and bored enough that it kind of stayed with me.
So you decided to find out what the fuck Dropsy was?
I went over to Wikipedia and punched in Dropsy.
Mm-hmm.
And it pulls up another page called Edema, and that is exactly what had been going on in my legs for off and on for the last several years.
Yep.
And apparently it's a major warning sign of heart problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I've kind of been chomping at the bit at with you know, getting in at this new job at Conservis and getting established there is getting my benefits. So I can finally you know, get some attention on this, figure out what's going on. I know I've pretty much given zero fucks about my health for quite a while now. But...
Well, it... Eventually things kind of, you know... You kind of have to.
My point is, very little would it didn't surprise me. I was a lot of things when I made the connection. Surprised wasn't one of them. But yeah, I'm just, and the reason I bring it up now is because my benefits have kicked in. Finally, I've got my medical card and I've got an appointment set up. I go in at 8 tomorrow morning for my first visit with full physical and blood work and hopefully get on the road to some form of recovery and, maybe, from what I've read, maybe not a clean bill of health, but something better than what I've got now, because there have been other issues with it. Considering that it is a circulatory problem, I've been sleepy a lot just from the blood not flowing the way it's supposed to be. I've told some of you already about how easy it is for me to fall asleep in my chair.
Mm-hmm.
In front of the computer, and how I've lost hours and days of my life that way. And it all comes back to this one thing. And yeah, now that I've identified it, and I really do want to get to the bottom of it, because...
Well, you're going to feel so much better when it's, you know, when it's being handled. Honestly.
Yeah. Like, you could get to a point in fairly recent memory where I just didn't care. And but I'm not in that place now, thankfully. It's kind of amusing slash scary at how long I might have let this go without any sort of attention if Square Enix hadn't decided to use that as a status effect in a one-off boss fight in Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah, sometimes it just takes one little trigger and it just gets your mind going in the right direction. So,
yeah.
In this case, it's good that it did.
It is.
Yeah, so I try not to bring heavier stuff onto the podcast, but I felt that one was noteworthy, and just to kind of bring everyone up to speed on where I am right now with my health. So
yeah, it does kind of sound like you're battling a cold at the moment too. So.
Yeah, that one snuck up on me Tuesday and just has been teeing off on me ever since. Yeah. That completely unrelated to the heart stuff. But, yeah. Yeah, when it rains, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Yeah, that has pretty much been my week.
Yeah.
All right, well, what about you, Teresa?
You alluded to this in a talk with me a couple days ago, and I've been curious ever since.
Oh, that would be Wednesday. You will hear about Wednesday. Gaming-wise, I've been playing Paper Mario Color Splash. And, I'm going to use this word. You're going to hate it. That game is freaking cute. It's just cute. Been enjoying that. Borrowed that from the library. That's not happening. I got to buy my own. Gotta buy my own for that one. I've been back at Civ 6 because of Wednesday. I needed my meditation, and that is my meditation. And I actually played a complete game from start to finish on Wednesday. No, it was on Thursday. It was after the bullshit Wednesday. Yeah. So, That was very nice. I was very happy to do that. It was something that I've been wanting to get around to, and I've had some problems with how I play Civ. I've tried using the Steam controller, and it works. I've tried using a mouse, which of course works, but doesn't work for my wrist. So I actually have a new laptop that I just got this evening, and it was one that I had ordered. I'm trying it. It's like molten lava. It's a razor blade, and it's hot. It is hot. Holy crap, it's hot. I've had it on a laptop cooling pad. It's burning hot. It sounds like the freaking jets right outside my balcony. It's hot, it's hot, it's hot. It's very, very hot.
Well, this is good. Probably not going to be a good thing.
We'll see. The screen on it is gorgeous. Oh, my God.
The nice thing is it's like an original PS4. You can have it double as a space heater in the winter.
Damn straight, you know?
Yeah. I still have an original PS4.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
It's an interesting machine. I don't know if this is the solution that I want, because I like playing Civilization on a laptop with a touchpad. Yeah. That's what works. So clearly I'm taking extraordinary measures to to find some shit that works for me.
Well, if that one doesn't work, you might look at one of the Acer Predators.
I was wondering about that. I'd been watching a lot of reviews on them on Mobile Tech Reviews channel on YouTube. And that might be, because I think if I go with a 1080, not a 1080, I can't fucking afford that. Like a 1050 Ti even would be fine for Civ 6.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I've got a nice processor, because I did play some Civ 6 on this thing tonight after I got it all installed, and it does take a long time to process the turns, long time, and I'm not even on a huge map.
Yeah.
I played a little bit of Final Fantasy 15 again, borrowed that from the library, and then I was like, yeah, whatever. I'm just going to play King's Tale and kind of just went mindless with that. But Wednesday, I had a job interview. And it was after a phone interview, and it was a 3-part interview with 3 different people. And the first part was fine. You know, everything went great there. The second part was with the person that I would be working for. That went pretty well. There were some, you know, I'm more of a content management system person. I have been for, well, in my last job at least. And I hadn't been doing a lot of coding per se. So I got asked if I know CodeFusion. I'm like, no, this is 2017.
What the fuck?
Yes. Yes.
Well, that means great things for their systems.
Well,
oh, man.
It's the legacy stuff. So they, you know, they're moving into content management system, which is where it is all at right now. Yeah. So I don't know about my chances of getting the job. It could be all right, because really I have the skills that they want going forward. But I don't have all the skills that they want for right now, for tomorrow. So at the end of my part of the interview with him, I felt something a little weird. And I still had to go and interview with his boss. And so he says, okay, well, that's enough now. And we get up to go next door to see his boss in his office. And I look at the chair. I got fucking period blood on his chair.
Oh, God.
Oh, shit, you guys never want to hear. Oh. Shit, I never want to say. And for like a split second, I do this cost benefit analysis in my head. Do I ignore it? Just go away?
The more distance you put in, the less likely they remember.
But it was noticeable. Do I run screaming to my car? And I'm thinking, I don't know where the fucking stairs are. He would catch me by the time I get to the elevator and ask me what's going on. So he's walking out, and I'm like, oh, hang on a second. Come back here. Like, can I have a paper towel? And then I died. And then I literally died. And then I had to go to the third part of the interview, and I don't want to do the same thing to this other guy's chair. So here I am being the weird ass fucking interview candidate who's sitting on her foot during the whole fucking interview. I was fucking done. I don't know how I got through it, but I got through it. And then I went to my car and exploded. And then Scott came home and went to the doctor, and then he exploded. So he ended up at the emergency room getting a CAT scan that night. I was so fucking done with that day. And you know why this happened, people?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because this crazy religious woman in my building ran into me the day before and said, oh, I'll be praying for you at your interview. Oh, yeah, you know what? Fucking Satan wanted his blood sacrifice, and he goddamn got it. So thank you for that.
Now I understand everything you said Wednesday afternoon.
I was so fucking done with this lady. And here she is coming and trying to give me an Easter dress. Give me clothing. While my husband is in the hospital getting a scan because he thinks his appendix is bursting.
Oh, tell him that part of the story.
So they did the CAT scan. It just turns out he needs to eat a lot more fiber. Oh my god.
It's in a nice package waiting to get it delivered.
He's like, well, I've been going to the bathroom every day. They're like, yeah, buddy, we don't know what you're pooping, but there's a shit ton in here. So then the next day he comes home from work. He's like, I farted all the way home. I shouldn't even tell you guys. This is so sick. And then he's, because he keeps alluding to birthing a giant brown baby. And then he says, I must be in transition, which is a point of labor when you think you're going to die. You'll never come back from it.
I just usually use the word planet.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This week can go fuck itself. It's like really, really hard.
Oh.
So here's our biology topic. Or, wow. Brandon, Chris, tell me you guys have had something better going on this week.
All right, Chris, you first.
Well, I'm not gonna, definitely not going to top any of that shit. but yeah, so I got around to finishing the first season of Daredevil on Netflix, and that was definitely a great first season. Very much in comparison to Iron Fist, where the choreography was left a lot to be desired. But in Daredevil, they definitely succeeded in making Matt Murdock a great blind badass.
Mm-hmm.
Very much makes you feel like he was actually trained by various people in how to fight. Unlike Iron Fist, where you just see him basically kind of just avoiding guys and then using their momentum to throw them to the ground a lot, which doesn't seem like what monks in another dimension would teach you to fight with. But yeah, I'm really excited to get to the second season because that's the setup for that looks like it's going to be really good, especially with what's his name? I forget the who he's going to be working with next season as Wilson Fisk, at least at the end of the first season, is safely away behind bars. So, as for game stuff, playing more Zelda, I managed to just try and get around to the various other towers I still have left to get to. Had a hell of a time trying to get to the tower near Death Mountain, which is just a giant volcano that's constantly erupting. So it's incredibly hot. My guy kept catching on fire a lot and dying. So instead of just trying to go straight through, I had to say, no, stop doing that. Just go around the other way. And eventually I got past it. There's one point I nearly got through it. Then a fucking skeleton archer shot me in the back as I was running away, like one hit kill.
Oh shit!
That was
that's a really good shot.
Yeah, I happened to be running directly straight line from where he was aiming.
Yeah, from watching a bunch of Zelda playthroughs, I think one thing that you should never ever assume when playing Breath of the Wild is that all the enemies have shoddy aiming. Because they really don't.
You have to screw
as
with
long
them.
As you're running side to side.
Yeah.
As long as you're not running, you know, directly straight away from them.
And but even
it has
then,
to be good lateral movement too.
Yeah, because even then, some of them have good enough aim that they can kind of, you know, predict where you're going.
Yeah, I've done enough of the combat. Yeah, I've done enough of the combat shrines with the mini guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Where once you get them down to like their last like 15-20% of health, they just start. Well, they give you a long lead time of just like sucking in energy, then just fire four straight shots at you. So that's giving me good practice on running the fuck away from enemies. Except for this one instance where I have to go on straight away from them because they fire four shots at you. So that's like, okay, I get a chance to fight them a little bit. Once I get close to being done filling up on energy, I just start hauling ass and make sure I have enough stamina to just keep running. Because they cannot keep up with that. But yeah, I'm out the Ritos. Did a bunch of stuff around there. Found another Lynel. It's nearby. I got some good armor. And pants and hair for whatever reason.
Hair.
Yeah. There's like a helmets and such, but this suit that basically keeps me warm is just like a new hairstyle for Link. Which is weird.
Oh,
it's not like an actual like cap or something like that. It's just some sort of like hairstyle difference. But yeah, it keeps me warm, so now I don't freeze to death nearly as easily, which was nice when I was taking out some enemies near there and just throwing bombs at them, just because they cannot figure out where the hell the bombs are coming from. They just know they keep turning around. There's a bomb on the floor. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Just keep going. Eventually, I'm going to go into one of the dungeons, but I found I've seen three of the divine beasts. So for the first one I'm going to take on is the one that the Zora have opened up for me. And yeah, so far so good on that. Rocket League is another game I've been getting back into, especially checking out their drop shot mode, which is just a really awesome take on the main style of gameplay that Rocket League has done so well. So yeah, the main difference is that it's not emulating any sport. Essentially, the ball you are hitting, there's three stages, level 1, 2, 3, and based on how much it's hit while it's in the air, it will level up. And three, essentially on each side of the map, there are these sort of honeycomb panels. And so they need to be hit twice to essentially open up, and you can drop the ball into there as a goal.
Hmm.
And so when you hit the ball around, the first time it'll just take out one spot. Second level, it does like a honeycomb shape around, so about 7. I think the third one will take out 13. And it's a lot of fun. It's a great aerial game. If you have any sort of skill in aerials, you will kill people in this. Just really get lots of goals. I did videos up on our YouTube channel, sort of checking in with that game, showing what that mode is all about. And that mode is just a lot of fun. Just something really cool idea that gets away from the sports part of it. Sort of along with that, I was watching the RLCS stuff that they were doing last weekend, which was sort of an all-star weekend kind of thing. Just called Mid-Season Mayhem, where they essentially had the one day I was watching was the North America tournament, where they just brought in 8 teams, had them play, I think, one match of Drop Shot, one match of Mayhem, which is sort of their power-up mode, where essentially every 10 seconds you get a new power-up, and when you use it, it's another 10 seconds to get the next power-up. And it's all randomized. So it's just constant chaos raining down as people get their different power-ups and start using it. But when people that know what the hell they're doing in Rocket League get power-ups, it's a lot different than just the stupid chaos that happens for everybody else. And then, like, the last three, they were doing best of 5 in those games. And so the other three were just viewer decided. They vote in polls and say, okay, we want it in this game type. Like, one was a pinball type, where the ball was much smaller but bounced around a lot more. So it was basically the ball barely hits the car, it goes flying into the air. So it makes their aerial skills a lot harder to predict, because they're still trying to figure out the physics and all that, but only have 5 minutes to do so. So it was really cool to see some of these pros sort of have to think on the fly and playing something that's different than just basic Rocket League. Yeah, it was really cool to see. And the other game I was mainly playing is Skyforce Anniversary, which is originally was a shmup on the phones. And I've been playing it on PS4, and the mobile routes definitely are there, because it is all grinding. You play the levels, you earn stars, and you can spend those to upgrade various aspects of it. Things like your basic cannon, your wing cannons, there's like laser cannons, shields, health, the magnetism on the stars, all that sort of stuff. There's like 10 levels to each of them or something like that. So it's a lot of just grinding. Each level has 4 main goals. Take out 70% of the enemies, all the enemies, save all the people, and don't get hit once. You don't need to do them all in one run, but you need to do them at least once. Once you do that, it unlocks the hard version, same goals. So it's very much like a game that's not hard. It's more just putting in the time to unlock and upgrade your abilities, and eventually it gets easier. So that's been kind of a fun, just time waster. Yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Okay, well, first of all, I am still playing Persona 5. I have recently started the third palace. That's the third main dungeon in the game. I've added a couple of new people to the party. And I've already started up doing some other activities in the game, like, you know, training, batting cages, the library, all that other stuff. Because, as with the other Persona games, there's a lot of stuff in this game that you can do. And you basically have to, because you have to build up various aspects of yourself. You know, your proficiency, your kindness, yes, guts, strength.
I'm hearing, you know, it's all about guts.
Yeah, you really do need to build up the guts in this game. There's actually some major side plot points won't happen unless you've got some serious guts.
Yeah.
But fortunately, there's plenty of ways to get it. And there's a bunch of other stuff, going to movies, just in general stuff. And of course, this game, you know, it takes place in and around Tokyo. So, you know, obviously, up to this point, most of the game has taken place in either, you know, the back alley where, you know, LeBlanc, the cafe is, where the main character lives. Then, of course, there's the school where the district is. Then there's Shibuya, which is the main hub for much of the game. That's the part where a lot of the major stuff happens. Later on, you also end up in Shinjuku. And if anybody knows anything about what Shinjuku is to people who live in Tokyo, this is basically, especially at night. When Shinjuku at night is basically like the, like a citywide red light district. It's where all of the bars.
I thought that was Kabukicho.
Oh, it also works. Shinjuku has like all the love hotels and all that stuff.
And all the bars too.
A lot of the bars. Oh yeah. That's one of the things that you have to do in the game. Meet up with one of your contacts in one of the random bars in Shinjuku. I've said before, obviously, of course, it's a video game, so it's fiction, but it does give you a really good idea of what it's like to live in Tokyo. For one thing, it shows you that Tokyo is big. Tokyo is a massive city. With so many little subdivisions inside of it.
Oh yeah.
So I've done doing that, making pretty good progress. Obviously I'm still doing anime. I finished watching the first few episodes of Future Diary on Crunchyroll, so I finally decided to just said screw it and splurged on the Blu-ray collection.
Nice.
And so that's now in my possession, and I will probably binge watch the rest of the anime probably sometime this weekend. Not binge watch. I've been told that Future Diary is one of those anime that you can't really binge watch without your soul dying.
I can't speak to that myself because when I experienced it, it was in manga form as it was being released in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't speak to any binging, mm-hmm. but I'm guessing there is some stuff that would that you would just internally downplay.
In paper form versus animated form.
Well, in binge form versus staggered form.
Yeah.
Is what I was going to say.
Because the thing about Future Diary is that, you know, children are not spared.
Yeah, and for quite some time, it was brilliant. Like, it was the natural successor to Death Note.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't maintain that brilliance throughout, but it still very successfully does what it sets out to do.
And then it ends on a serious mindfuck.
Yeah.
I've been told. And after I finish that, I'm planning on going the opposite side of the spectrum and getting Angel Beat.
Oh, you want to destroy yourself?
Yeah, basically. I want to cry my eyes out and not leave my room for about a week. Those who don't know, Angel Beat is by the same people who are behind stuff like Canon and Air and Clannad and the genre of big-eyed schoolgirls dying from sickness in the snow, that type of thing. Except, obviously, it's a very different story from that, but it's written and the music's composed by the same guy, so
it was an impressive series, and they got a lot done for how short it was.
Yeah, it's only 13 episodes.
A lot of really likable characters.
A lot of really likable characters that disappear far too quickly.
Yes.
But yes, that is one of those anime that will tear your heart out of your soul and stomp it on the ground.
Well, it doesn't even really give you warning when it does. It's not some big reveal. It just, you're happens. The one who's going to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
And that revelation, that internalized understanding is what will destroy you.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's that, and
it'll hit you long before they, long before the show really
openly
comes right out with it
and says it. Yeah, you sort of start to get. From what I've been told, you slowly but surely they give you enough details that you start to recognize what this school actually is and who these people are, why they're there, and why they can't remember anything of their lives up until that point. I'm dreading summer. I don't know if anybody's noticed this, but it's already gotten up to the mid-80s down here.
Yeah, I've heard.
It's hot as balls.
And we're not even at May yet.
Nope.
So I am basically dreading summer because I am convinced it's going to be a nasty one this year.
Yep.
I mean, summers in the South are hot by default, but
this one's probably going to be like cut the humidity with a knife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cut it with a knife, put it in a pot, and you can make stew out of it. It's going to be that thick.
Hmm.
As everybody knows, I revealed this last week. We did have the yard sale last Saturday. That went well. We made over $500.
Nice.
Yeah. We still had a bunch left over, though. So most of that either went to, either the Goodwill or the dumpster, basically. And I've told everybody what it's like to having to take out trash where I live.
Yeah, you don't have a collection. You have to do it yourself.
Yep.
I remember those days. They actually got collection where my family lives in Kentucky now.
Yeah.
You have to pay a lot for it, but before that, they would go dump it in the pond on their back 40. Seriously. Seriously. Yeah. Or they would burn it in the burning barrel. Whatever could burn, burned.
Yeah. Well, this is Kentucky, right? So
yep.
Yeah, I believe it.
In the pond. And these guys are on wells, okay? Mm-hmm. Their own well. Have you heard of shooting yourself in the foot?
That's apparently less shooting yourself in the foot and less machine gunning yourself in the groin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is that, you know, that stuff, all we did that days ago, and I still have muscles in places I didn't know exist that are sore. Yeah, because it wasn't
what happened to me from all the coughing I've done.
Yeah, because, I mean, it wasn't just arms and legs. I mean, it was our back, for that matter. I mean, it was chest, groin area, just.
Yep.
But, yeah, so that was a lot of not fun, but it's over with. Don't ever have to worry about that again, at least for a while.
Yeah.
So that was basically my my week. So anybody got anything else they wanted to add?
Oh, yeah, I forgot something. So I mentioned before I run a contest over at Cheap Ass Gamer every year for the March Madness contest, so I divvied out prizes. And this is the first year that all three winners decided not to make all their picks for games prizes. I guess apparently offering free games to people that are cheap asses is not enough for the first time I've ever seen.
Wow.
So I had about 73 prizes, I think, total. It's like the winner got about 30 some, took about six prizes. So it's like, okay, this is the first. Winner of a contest said no thanks to most of their prizes on the basis that they wouldn't be able to use them anyway, which is not how cheap asses work.
Mm-hmm.
You think you offer them a bunch of free stuff, they say, thank you. I mean, I'll use it, but yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah.
So now I've got all the prizes sent out, codes and such. And now I got a bunch of codes left over. So I got to figure out what to do to get rid of them, because I bought most of these codes specifically to give them away. Stuff from like Humble Bundle and all that.
Yeah.
Which then I also found out some of the free codes you can get on their site occasionally. Yeah. Those expire. You have to actually go in and redeem them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's like, oh, we gave this. You got 2 weeks to just tell us to give you a code for this thing, and or else it's going to be nothing.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So I have spots sitting on my like list of codes. Like, this isn't a thing. Like, oh, that's great.
Joy.
I wish I could erase this now so I don't have to live with the shame of having fake free games here.
Hmm. Well, you can always sell them on G2A.
I'm not as dumb as Gearbox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Alrighty then.
One more small thing here. Little tip for Windows 10 creators update people, which should be most of you at this point. You probably got prompted or something this week if you're using Windows 10. There's a new little feature in the Action Center now, down at the bottom. It's called Nightlight. What this does is actually cuts the blue from your monitor. Okay, it makes everything look a little weird and orange. But if you're somebody who uses their computer late at night, very, very helpful.
Where is it again?
To click on the Action Center buttons down there at the bottom.
Okay.
Hmm.
Yep.
I use it on my phone all the time. I should be using it here.
Yep. Yeah,
but I just upgraded to 10 on this computer today.
Yeah. If you haven't gotten the creators update, you can get that. But yeah, it's good stuff. So
how does it handle white pages?
It kind of makes them orangey.
That's a little weird.
Yeah, it does look a little weird. Your eyes kind of get used to it after a while. But,
yeah,
it's less. It's like right now I'm looking at white text that would be white, and it's just kind of orangey. And
maybe sites that are predominantly white should just offer night modes, dark themes.
Well, that would be Twitter. Nice.
Offer a dark version of your site.
Yeah, it would be great, but nope.
Oh.
I looked through like the million settings it has, like, no, no dark theme yet.
Nope. Yeah.
No, but we get colored backgrounds on Facebook.
Yep.
Instead of like fucking WYSIWYG editor options.
Yeah.
I like making posts, and I usually put like the first line in our staff group. Usually try to make it like a title, but can't bold it or anything so it stands out.
Yeah.
Which makes it really hard to try and skim through, like, where's that post at? Where's that at?
Yeah.
I skip over it all the time. But sometimes when you're typing stuff out on Facebook, it's like giant text, and it realizes, oh, you're going to type a lot here.
Yeah, and then it starts shrinking.
Yeah. Oh, but I'm going to put the background on this post, make it orange, because that makes sense.
Yeah.
I can't really tell that that it's doing anything. It doesn't work quite like Flux did, or does.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, but...
You'd think with billions of dollars, Facebook would add more options.
Oh, wait, no, I see it now. I see it now.
Yeah.
Does Reddit have a night mode on, like, just in browser mode? I know they do on the apps.
As far as on the browser, no, as far as they don't.
God damn them.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway.
Yeah, so that's that was my quick tip.
Mm. All right, then. Well, with all that said, it's now once again time for everyone's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And so I recently brought up the fact that, you know, I was watching Future Diary. And one of the things I realized within the first few episodes that adds to the overall, let's say, for lack of a better word, horror of the series is that a lot of the shit that's happening to these characters, you realize how old they actually are.
Yep.
They're actually middle schoolers. So these are like kids like 13, 14 years old. But see, here's the thing. I would have actually, if I was Japanese, I would have already figured that out at the very beginning of the series from the first episode. And there's a very clear reason why. So the series basically starts in a dude's classroom, right? At his school.
Yeah.
But do you notice something about all the folks in that classroom? Something that you wouldn't expect.
This has been a while.
They're not wearing uniforms.
Why not?
Because, believe it or not, for most middle schools in Japan, uniforms are not a requirement. Uniforms are primarily the requirement for the high school characters, for the high school students.
Characters.
Well, they're both true, but...
Valid.
Yeah. And it's also the same thing is also the truth for, you know, elementary school. So here, it's funny because... We have here in the West this very sort of weird view of what it's like to go to a school in Japan. Now, obviously, anime exaggerates some stuff, but it also actually has a lot of truth behind it. So, I thought that since we're all anime geeks here, I'd go ahead and reveal to you what it's actually like to go to a high school in Japan. Now, there's two things you need to understand. Number one, anime does exaggerate some of the parts of it. No, obviously the student councils don't rule the schools with an iron fist. Number two, they're not always as strict as they're sometimes made out to be. But there are some important things you have to know. First of all, remember that this is Japan, and Japanese culture has certain characteristics that, you know, for a Japanese youth is completely normal. But for, like, you know, a Japanese, you know, like for an American would seem to be just odd. So first thing you have to remember is high schools in Japan are 100% voluntary. They are not actually required. They, you know, the actual education, required education, is up until around the, I think it's the 10th, the 9th or 10th grade. And once you do that, then, you know, that's the end of the, you know, education in Japan. That's actually a requirement that you are actually forced to do. Whereas, you know, here in the U.S., you have to go from kindergarten all the way up to high school senior. Not so in Japan. However, here's the thing. Japanese high schools are, first of all, so a lot of them are either privately owned or they're controlled by the central government. And they all are, first of all, if you've watched enough anime or read enough manga, you already know this. It's a very competitive thing to try to get into a high school. There's a reason why a lot of anime put a lot of emphasis on, like, exams and stuff. Because those exams sort of determine what high school you'll be able to get to. And so what happens is if you manage to get into a particular high school, you will, of course, have a bunch of requirements for you. The first one, of course, obviously, is the uniform. And, of course, every school has their own individual uniform. So if you're in a, you know, if you're in a particular school, you wear the particular uniform. It usually has a patch or a badge on it somewhere that identifies what school you go to. And these uniforms can be everything, the military style, in Sailor Fuku uniforms. You know, of course, Sailor ones are for the girls. The more military ones are for the guys. Or, and this is more of a modern trend, you'll have more business-like, you know, slacks with short tie or plaid skirts with short tie and blazers for the girls. No Japanese, it is, now, like I said, most of these schools, you know, they operate on a semi-autonomous basis, but they do all have, you know, national standards they have to work with. But the reason, and I say that because every high school in Japan is different in the ways that they emphasize certain things, whereas some of them are a little bit lax on other things. So, and the reason I'm pointing that out is because if you ever look online to find out what it's like to go to a Japanese high school, it goes from everything from being like to like overemphasizing the strictness to like sort of making it out like some weird exotic like alien culture or something, like they're on an alien planet or something. Which, you know, is true, you know, they're Japanese, and of course Japanese culture has certain things, but at the same time, they're still teenagers. You know, teenagers still do stuff. And so, amongst other things, no high schooler in Japan can drive in a car to school. They have to either walk or take a bike or use, of course, Japan's famous public transportation, the subways, the buses, the trains, stuff like that. A lot of schools in Japan do not allow students to bring any kind of processed or junk food with them into the school for lunch. They either have to, you know, they have to either prepare their own meals, you know, a bento box that, you know, a parent figure might make them, or they'll have, you know, the lunch from the school, which is usually pretty high in nutrition. Japanese high schoolers tend, most Japanese high schools, and this is pretty much the standard, you cannot wear your regular shoes inside the classroom. Instead, you were given a special kind of slipper. I'm trying to remember what it's called. Let me see if I can find them here. Yeah, here we go. It's a particular kind of slipper known as the uwabaki. If you've ever seen them, some of them are, they all come in different colors. If you ever watched anime, the most common you've probably seen is brown. You'll know these ones because they're the ones that are really easy to fall out of.
Yeah, the ones with like this, they almost look like penny loafers kind of.
Yeah,
on top.
The ones that they have like one little strip of leather over top it just to give some sort of sturdiness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some schools, you know, they'll make you only have to roach those in the classroom. Some of them will basically make you wear them no matter where you are on the school grounds. Usually every high school will have a weekly assembly. And even that can be different from school to school. Some high schools are, you know, don't really mind if you're sitting very casually or anything, whereas others are usually very strict and sort of military style, you know, sitting perfectly erect with, you know, arms on your knees and legs. And keep in mind that those types of, some of those assemblies can last like 3 hours. So, of course, and again, this is another thing, if you watch anime, that's also true. Although, you know, most classes have a home room, but there aren't, with the exception of like lab or gym, there are no separate classes for separate subjects. Basically, all students stay in one classroom and the teachers just sort of rotate around a certain part of the school.
Which, you know, if you ask me, makes a hell of a lot more sense.
Yeah. The average school day for a Japanese high school or for a school person in general is actually pretty close to the Western standard. It's usually around 8:30 to 3 o'clock. So, but keep, yeah. So 8:30 in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Tell them about club activities, though.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing. A lot of high schools basically require you to sign up for a club. Again, if you've watched a lot of school anime, you'll know clubs are a big deal. And those can usually last a couple hours. So, and of course, clubs in Japan, first of all, some, like I said, many require that you sign up for a club, but at the same time, others don't. And usually most students only sign up for one club for their given time at school. They rarely change clubs from year to year. And of course those clubs go everything from like, you know, from like certain subjects, like they'll have the English club or the science fiction club, you know, the culture club, Boy George reference here. And also, you know, and of course the festivities club, and of course there's the student council and stuff like that. And you know, of course, a lot of these clubs, there's a lot of different individual clubs and new clubs come in all the time. So they're usually very specific, and it's usually not very hard to find a club you usually won't have trouble finding a club you'll actually enjoy. Technically, although the school day ends at 3, really it ends more around like 5 or 5:30. And then of course, you know, there's the exams. Still in high school, you still got the exams thing going, but this time it's for colleges. I forgot to also mention, a lot of different high schools specialize in specific things. So, like, there's high schools that specialize in art or government work or science or stuff like that. So, let's see. A lot of high schools generally do not allow – well, don't necessarily – it's not that it's not allowed, but they – discourage dating between students until after they finished high school. But of course, if you've seen enough of Japanese entertainment, you'll know that that isn't always followed. So yeah, dating in high schools is still really common. Also, they have this thing about if you're, depending on the school, if you're in uniform at any given time and you're like in a certain particular distance within or away from the school, it still governs your behavior. So like some students may be required to like, if they have to take the train home, they might be required to stand up or give up their seat to an older passenger. They may be required to sit a certain way if they're waiting on a ride. They might not be able to eat different types of things. They might not be allowed to do things like chew gum or read a book while walking. Anything that could reflect negatively on the school, basically. And of course, there's the sports stuff. In Japan, high school baseball is like the big thing. In fact, it's probably even bigger than the professionals. And if you want to see a sport where Japanese people go completely, utterly wild, like insane, high school baseball is the one. It is the closest thing to seeing Japanese people act like football hooligans. Usually your average Japanese high schoolers will have maybe only a couple hours a day to themselves. They'll usually spend a couple hours at home studying or doing homework. A lot of Japanese high schoolers tend to focus a lot of their days on their academic studies. But again, the strictness and what they emphasize differs from school to school. So, also, and this is another major thing I need to emphasize again, high schools are strictly voluntary. So, this is basically you are choosing to take on all of this stuff. And usually, depending on what schools you go to, you'll usually have a good way of having like a good pathway into like, you know, a nice government job or things like that. And that's basically what it's like to be a Japanese high schooler.
So you got no free time, and you're possibly set up for a career afterwards. So.
Yeah. Well, you do have free time. I mean, you know, like I said, it depends on the school.
Yeah.
Some schools are more strict about it than others.
Yeah.
Again, it's not... It's stricter than your average Western high school, but not quite as strict as you might imagine.
Yeah.
And that has been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Cool.
And now you're less stupid.
Well, I don't know about that.
Thank you.
All right.
Well then, time to get on to the show proper. And first up, of course, we have to talk about our assholes of the week. And we had two major candidates that we couldn't decide between, so we just had both of them.
They both fought real hard to get here.
Yeah, it was...
We decided we'd honor them both.
Yes, it was a knockout, drag-out brawl between these two, and it came
like
out a draw.
It's like they saw what Pepsi did last week and said, well, we can one-up that pretty
easily. Hold my beer.
Yeah. All right, so we'll start with the first most infamous one. That's also the other infamous one. Like I said, both of these are kind of equal in their infamy.
Yeah.
But in degrees. The first one, of course, involves White House spokesperson Sean Spicer.
Yeah.
Again.
Seems like he's not very good at public speaking for a job that requires public speaking.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that. So
feel bad to be in the Easter Bunny, I swear to God.
Yeah.
I really should have just stuck with that.
Yeah. So, first things first, as everybody knows, there was that chemical attack in Syria and even though it's supposed to have, and people aren't, the mainstream opinion is that it was dropped by Assad. Specifically by Bashar al-Assad's government himself to further break the anti-government resistance in his country. The other opinion is that it may have been a ploy by either Al-Qaeda or Al-Nusra or ISIS as sort of a false flag to get to get these states to start up a war with Syria. Which, for the record, they have done before.
Yeah.
So, honestly, I can't really give you an opinion because I really just don't know the truth of which one. What I do know, however, is that when Sean Spicer was trying to justify the resultant missile strike we did on that Syrian airbase, when he was trying to justify it, he was saying chemical weapons are a bad thing. Nobody should use chemical weapons. Back during World War II, even Hitler didn't use chemical weapons on his people. Hold on. Put on the brakes there, Spicy. You do realize he did use chemical weapons on German Jews.
Yeah.
And various other Germans whom he didn't like.
Yeah. And he had a nice clarification saying, he didn't use them on his own people.
Well, actually he did.
Yeah. So. A lot of the Jews that were in the camps in Germany were, in fact, German citizens. Germany for generations.
Which
in fact, there were families that lived there before Germany even became a country.
Yeah.
Which leads to a great chyron on MSNBC where it says, White House, Hitler didn't, quote, sink to level of using chemical weapons, end quote, like Syrian leader. In parentheses, Hitler gassed millions. That's got to be a highlight job for chyron writers across the biz, be able to lay that sort of thing. So now there's obviously Sean Spicer's face right above this amazing couple of lines of text on a chyron. After that, he put out text statements basically saying, this is his second clarification. Earlier when he was doing his first clarification, he was talking about Holocaust centers. That's where they put the Jews, in Holocaust centers.
Oh, cool.
Words no good for Sean Spicer.
No.
Second statements, in no way was I trying to lessen the horrendous nature of the Holocaust. However, I was trying to draw a contrast to the tactic of using airplanes to drop chemical weapons on innocent people. Third clarification. He changes innocent people to population centers. Fourth clarification. Pretty much the same first two lines. Last line, any attack on innocent people is reprehensible and inexcusable. Then I think he went on CNN after that to officially apologize.
Yeah.
For all the stupid shit he said, but it's an amazing series of events. I think the Anne Frank Center was calling for him to be fired.
Resign. Yeah.
Obviously, that's not going to happen because this whole administration is built on getting away with terrible things.
Yeah. Now, because I'm such a nice person, I'm going to go ahead and give Sean Spicer the benefit of the doubt here and say that I don't think he was necessarily trying to suggest anything close to Holocaust denial.
No, I think
I don't think he was. He's just kind of in
massive brain fart.
Yeah.
Well,
here's what I am going to say, though. Sean Spicer is supposed to be the spokesperson for the White House. He is basically the guy whose job is to go before the press and try to explain the actions. Yeah. To explain the actions of the commander in chief. It hasn't even been 100 days since Trump took office.
No.
And in just about every single press conference that Sean Spicer has given, he has made gaffe after gaffe after gaffe after gaffe. So much so you could mark your calendar with them.
I mean, the biggest one should be never compare anybody to Hitler.
Yeah.
We're lucky we'll never see anybody worse than him.
Yeah. That should be PR 101.
Yeah. And at this point,
Hitler
it's...
didn't do anything as bad as what other people did. No. Guess who came up with sarin gas?
Mm.
The Nazis.
Yeah.
The closest anyone's ever come next to it would be Milosevic, because he actually instituted rape camps, but that's another thing entirely. The point I'm making is, it's obvious that Sean Spicer is grossly incompetent in his job, and he just needs to step down, or just straight up be fired.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what about this job makes him think he should... withstand all of this every single time he goes up.
Yeah.
I mean, you can remember all those gifs of reporters in attendance shaking their heads at the complete disbelief of what he was talking about with Hitler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Just look, you've already got a noted white nationalist inside your administration. Just lay off the H word.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, did we mention that he said this on during Yom Kippur?
Yep, Passover.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, that went well.
Exactly. God, it's... okay. Also, just on a side note, Holocaust denialists are a very special breed of people. Isolate yourselves from them the best you can. Or better yet, isolate them from the rest of the world.
That would be nice.
They do not deserve your pity or your attention. So, that was our first asshole of the week. Now for the other infamous assholes of the week.
Yep.
Okay, so, when you ask a lot of people, what is the absolute gobshite, most awful airline company in the United States? Almost all of them will say the same one. United Airlines.
Pretty much, yeah. I haven't...
United Airlines is awful. They treat their customers like shit. Now, it's a rule of thumb that most airline companies tend to treat their regular customers like shit, but United Airlines is particularly infamous for how badly they treat their customers. And it looks like it's finally caught up to them. So, a gentleman, a Vietnamese-American gentleman, 69 years old, who is a doctor, by the way, was flying back home to see some patients that he really needed to see because he's a medical, Hippocratic Oath, blah, 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 all that stuff. United Airlines has this policy where they tend to overbook all of their flights.
Mm-hmm.
And from their explanation, it's in case of, of like latecomers or no-shows. Or that they needed to, in this case, they needed to put their personnel on the plane. They need to save seats for them. Now, this gentleman, of course, again, is a medical doctor, which from any sane kind of policy would have exempted him from this, because being medical personnel, he's essentially a necessity.
Yeah.
If he's on there, if something were to happen on the flight, he would be obligated to attend to that individual.
Whatever system they use randomly chooses him.
Yeah. So, instead, because they apparently needed some places to stick some of their personnel to get to... What was it? What was the city that they needed to get these personnel to? I forgot.
Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville, which they actually could have just rented a car and...
They were in Chicago.
Yeah, they were in Chicago. They could have literally rented these folks a car and...
I want to say it's a general rule that...
Half hour trip.
I want to say it's a general thing that other airlines will let them fly with them for free.
Yeah.
Any airline employees can generally fly with any other airline for free.
Yeah.
Should they need a ride.
Yeah.
But obviously this guy saying his daughter's like, look, I can't go. I got to get back to where I am. I've got patients I got to treat. And, you know, they asked him again. He's like, no, man, I'm a doctor. I gotta get on this flight. I got folks back home who need my care. So then they brought up some air marshals and some police. They threw him against the armrest and then dragged him bleeding out of the plane.
Yeah, at that point.
And the whole thing was caught on video.
Yeah. He got a concussion.
Uh-huh.
He broke his nose.
Yep.
And broke two of his front teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs reconstructive surgery, so he's not going to tend to any of his patients for a while.
And let's mention again his age.
69.
69-year-old man.
Yep.
It's a huge physical threat to these men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it looks like it. And you can tell this dude suffered a concussion by the behavior he exhibits afterwards, because he actually managed to sneak back onto the plane.
Somehow they lost track of him.
Yeah.
Lost track of a bloodied up 69-year-old man.
And he's basically jogging down the aisle going, repeating over and over again, I have to get home, I have to get home, I have to get home, I have to get home. It's obvious this dude suffered some kind of head trauma.
Yeah, apparently he doesn't remember that anymore.
Mm-hmm. And as you're probably going to guess, some major shit went down. United Airlines stock basically tanked.
I think within about 2 hours, they lost $450 million.
Yeah.
They could have probably upped their voucher, even cash money offers, up to a couple thousand dollars.
And see, the thing is, those vouchers suck anyway, because they're usually with really terrible hours and to places you normally wouldn't want to go to anyway.
Yeah, though after this, all the people that were on the plane got their money refunded.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's amazing. The other thing, when the guy got back on and then they finally got a hold of him and took him back off, they kicked everybody off the plane because there's blood all over the place.
Yeah.
So that was about a 2.5-hour process from the time they were originally going to leave to when they could actually leave, because they had to clean up the plane.
Yeah. So this has basically reverberated all throughout the various airlines. I think it was what was it? American Air?
Yeah.
Is now actually offering they said that they're going to start offering refunds, refunds or like good vouchers of up to like $10,000 for extraneous situations like this.
Yeah.
All in all, it's really sort of gotten people to it's really gotten people to reflect on just how bad it's gotten to fly in America since 9/11.
Yeah.
And it's really gotten people to reflect on just really what the bullshit that the TSA actually is.
Yeah.
And, you know, air marshals and shit like that.
Yeah, and I think the Chicago aviation department, I think.
Isn't it the union, actually?
It was whatever government body that sort of overlooks all this aviation stuff. Essentially lambasted United and the Chicago Police Department for pretty much every part of handling this.
Yeah, I mean, they basically...
Two police officers were put on permanent leave, at least for the time being.
Yeah.
As a result of the way they handled this.
Oh, yeah. Did we mention that in order to try to slander this guy, the police basically tried to drag up his old criminal record?
And there were newspapers in Louisville that found his name and showed, he's got a bad past. Like, that matters. That entitles them to beat the shit out of this 69-year-old man.
Yeah.
They had no idea what the hell was going on. They don't know his past when they assaulted him.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, God, this guy was accused of trading drugs for sex to a prostitute over a fucking decade ago.
Yeah, statute of limitations.
That certainly justifies basically doxing assaulting him, right? an elderly gentleman.
Yeah. United.
Yeah.
So there's definitely going to be paying out quite a bit of money.
Oh, they are going to pay out the ass for this one.
The lawyer's basically saying we're going after United and the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they should.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've already started.
By the end of it, I hope he sits upon a throne of just millions of dollars while both United Air and the Chicago police are on their knees sucking his cock.
Mm-hmm.
Because he deserves it.
Yeah.
The poor man was slightly brown, and we're talking about Chicago PD.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a...
I don't he's also Asian. Anymore. See, he's Korean a Vietnamese American. He's yeah. Korean? Okay. I thought he was
Korean
Vietnamese.
Korean or Vietnamese, I forget which one.
Yeah, he's one of them, but
yeah.
he's an Asian, elderly Asian gentleman. Yeah. But,
and on top of that, the United CO was sending around memos internally.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, you guys did nothing wrong. This is how we're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
It was nothing
wrong.
It's that evil man that tried to not listen to us.
Yeah. United is basically fucked.
Especially because of their CEO.
I've heard a lot of people just say, yeah, I'm no longer a United customer at this point.
So, yeah.
Except for Joe Walsh. We talked about him the other week.
Oh, yeah. That
like, oh, yeah, I'm going to fly on United now. They did nothing wrong.
Because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
So. It's like, okay, we'll make this the official airline of assholes across the country.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Instead of United Airlines, it's now United Assholes.
I heard a good story about JetBlue, how they handled – so like I said earlier, like generally airlines will let other airline employees fly with them for free.
Mm-hmm.
JetBlue apparently has a policy of not overselling their flights.
Mm-hmm.
So they generally would have a couple empty seats most flights. And this involved some points United shutting down their Miami service there, I guess. Mm-hmm. So essentially those employees, when they would land in Miami, would have to find another way to get to their next destination. Hmm. And so they would often fly with JetBlue because they usually had seats open. JetBlue people would be nice enough to them.
Yeah.
And eventually the United CEO caught wind of this. Like at one point they said they had 23 United employees on a flight.
Mm-hmm.
Just happened to be that many people. But the United CO happened to catch wind of this and basically put out a memo forbidding any of his employees from riding with JetBlue. And so in response
to JetBlue... So, yeah, he's a special kind of asshole.
In response, the JetBlue CO basically said, fuck you, this is my airlines, I will do as I please.
Mm-hmm.
And so in response, the United employees were like, man, your CEO cares a lot more about me than mine.
you guys hiring?
Basically.
Can we have a job?
Yeah.
So I got experience. You wonder how an airline runs into this sort of shit and cannot figure out how to get out of it. It's because they got that man leading the ship.
Yeah. Just like any other shitty company, usually run by a shitty person.
Yeah.
So,
I think 3-4 apology attempts to actually apologize.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it's going to cost them millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah. And it's permanently stained their reputation because they had a bad reputation before, but now their reputation is absolutely toxic.
Yeah.
Same as their stock.
Yep. All right. But it wasn't all bad because we're our heroes of the week. So back when Barack Obama was our president, and of course
it seems like forever ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he is no longer president to the world's everlasting regret. But anyway, during his time as president, one of his chief issues, as we all know, was of course health care reform.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big – I believe it was one of the big controversies at the time was this healthcare reform and would it, you know, give benefits or give free benefits to people who are undocumented immigrants or undocumented workers or illegal aliens as less charitable people would describe it. And he denied that this is not what was going to happen during a State of the Union address. And then famously, what eventually became sort of the first sign that, oh God, we're going to have to deal with these assholes for the next 7 years. South Carolina Representative Joe Wilson got out of his seat and shouted, "You lie," to Barack Obama, to the president during his State of the Union address.
Yep.
Showing you the sort of discourse we would get for the next, now it's 8 years after that.
Yeah, a lot of people point at that one moment as sort of like the moment we recognize that shit was fixing to get ugly. Because he basically kind of broke a taboo at that point, yeah. Even though it, whether or not it was actually a taboo is debatable, but it was perceived as such.
It certainly should have been.
Yeah. Because remember, we've had times in our country's past where we've straight up had fist fights in our Congress in the olden days. But anyway, so for the record, Joe Wilson is still a representative for South Carolina. And he is, of course, he is now on the anti-ACA train and more or less supporting the HACA, the American Healthcare Act, or what was going to be. And so he held a town hall in what city was it?
I think this is Graniteville.
Graniteville in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And guess what the audience threw at him? Chants of "You lie." How's it feel?
That's rich. Oh, I like that. I like
and
that.
And so another smart people in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I've said this before.
None of them are in the government.
No. But I've said it before, and I will once again say it again. One of the sweeter parts of the Trump presidency is seeing all of these people going to these town halls to various representatives who actually were elected on a Tea Party wave, mostly with the tactics, and then having to deal with the same type of angry, pissed off town halls that helped them get into government in the first place.
Yeah, they don't like it so much when the shoe's on the other foot.
Yeah, and you also get to realize just how weak their actual commitment to the ideas of freedom actually are, because usually they end up running off like pussies with their tails between their legs.
Yeah.
Or try to come up with some side of excuses, or try to pass some kind of laws to prevent certain kinds of protests, labeling certain kinds of protests as quote-unquote economic terrorism.
Yeah, there's a nice bit in here about his thoughts on the whole Syria thing with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
My Xbox One just turned on for no reason. Okay, his quote is, "I was very pleased by the president's response," said Wilson, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, during an interview with reporters before the event. "And I would have supported the prior president if he had acted, but he didn't. Where chemical weapons are used, there should be immediate action. Because if we don't, sadly, it's an opportunity for chemical weapons to be used around the world."
Need a tissue there, bud?
I'm good.
"And it's an opportunity for chemical weapons to be used around the world, and we know ultimately within the United States." Yeah, sure, you would have supported the prior president.
Bullshit.
"He who shall not be named."
Yeah.
Another amazing thing seeing recently is everything that Donald Trump does, apparently he complained about on his Twitter account years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Every single thing, he's mad at his future self, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically on Twitter begging President Obama to not go to war with Syria back in 2013.
Yeah.
And, not to do any airstrikes.
Issues.
Yeah.
All this stuff, it's like goddamn, it's like you went back to the past to warn yourself and you're fucking too stupid to listen.
Oh, it's not that he's too stupid to listen. It's that the man is 100% amoral and has no beliefs.
Yeah.
And that's why he had to learn about Chinese and Korean history from president of China.
By the way, you know you're winning a bad person when we're really on the verge, on the cusp of going to war with North Korea, and Xi Jinping, the premier of the People's Republic of China, is the adult in the room.
And he's like trying to urge both sides to calm down.
Basically,
calm down, children. Calm down.
Yeah. Because that's basically it. Both of the belligerents here are basically led by a bunch of grown-up man children. You know, one is a shitty businessman and a former reality show star. The other is the latest in a lineage of hardcore Stalinist dictators that goes back to the 1950s.
Yeah.
And also happens to be a little crazier than both of them combined.
Yeah.
So, yeah. How's that taste, Mr. Wilson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just another example of how everything the GOP does eventually comes back at them.
Yeah. So,
probably motor because we're already pretty late here. So,
yeah. Well, all right. So, some sad news. Eddie Murphy's older brother, Charlie Murphy, sadly lost his battle with leukemia and passed away at the age of 57. Charlie Murphy, of course, he's famous for his stuff on the Chappelle Show. Of course, he did a lot of work with his brother in his movies.
A lot of voice acting and such.
A lot of voice acting. Fairly good deal of stand-up. And, of course, he'll forever be remembered for his Charlie Murphy's True Hollywood Stories on Chappelle.
Those are some of the best skits ever.
Oh, my God, they are.
Because they're actually true.
They got them up on Comedy Central site, so
it
really
understand
is nice to watch.
Those, they call them True Hollywood Stories because they're true. They actually happened.
Yeah.
Now, all those stuff he's talking about, Prince kicking their ass at a basketball game, Charlie Murphy showing up and rubbing his dirty boots all over Eddie Murphy's couch.
Even had Rick James there confirm it all.
Yeah. All that shit really happened.
Yeah.
And
apparently when you're the brother of the most famous person in all of Hollywood, Eddie Murphy, you get to see a lot of crazy shit that goes on around him.
Yeah. And, his basically what he revealed about Prince is basically 100% what you expected. He's this weird – Prince was, an amazing performer and musician, but in person he had this weird sort of monotone thing with him where he kind of just thought every person around him was somehow beneath him.
Yeah.
So.
But it's sad.
Yeah.
But he's left behind a great legacy.
Yeah.
Also, despite I think a lot of people emphasize about the fact is that whatever type of character Charlie played is usually the opposite of who Charlie Murphy actually was. Murphy, in person was a very gentle, very friendly person.
Yeah.
He was a doting father. He adored his children, and basically he did as soon as he finished a job, he would do whatever he could so he could rush back as fast as he can to his home, raise his kids. It's sad he's gone, but he left behind
working right up till the end.
Oh yeah. But he left behind a great legacy. So
yeah.
Rest in peace, Charlie. You're kicking Rick James' ass up there in heaven now.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. So moving on. The state of New Mexico is the first state to pass an anti-lunch shaming law. Now, people are wondering, what the hell does that mean? Basically, when a child that is impoverished is trying to get lunch, at a cafeteria, at a school cafeteria, and they can't pay for it, you can't do anything to try to single them out or
embarrass them
or put on a bunch of bullshit charges on the bill or anything like that.
Yeah, they got some examples here. In Alabama, a child short on funds was stamped on the arm with "I need lunch money." Some schools force children to clean the tables in front of their peers to pay off the debts. And others, I guess, have the workers just go and take their food and just throw in the trash if they didn't have the money to pay for it. Which, I'm lucky I've never seen anything like that.
No.
I don't think I ever saw any sort of repercussions. Though, when I was going to school, it was kind of just the tickets.
Yeah.
You just went and paid up front for, like, X amount of tickets, and
yeah,
that was what you needed to pay off your lunch for a couple weeks.
If you haven't figured out now that there is a sickness in America now, a moral sickness, it should be your wake-up call right here.
Yeah.
Because the idea that this means that we actually, that this is, you know, such a widespread problem that there actually has to be a law.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't think there's much more to add to that.
Other than hats off to New Mexico for
at least
acknowledging it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Something in place.
Yeah,
school should be like the baseline.
And keep in
mind, the kids should be able to just get a free lunch if they need
it. And keep in mind this shit. This is like grade school.
Yeah.
We're talking about here.
This is the formative years of a kid's life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a good way to fuck up these kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Now to something a little funnier. We swear to God, this is not an SNL skit.
Nope, this happened.
Yeah, so Dr. Even though it's a miracle he somehow is one, Ben Carson actually got stuck in an elevator as no one other than Alonzo Mourning was waiting outside.
And this is in a public housing complex in Miami.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just
so
this, I read this like, wait, is this some sort of satire?
Well, okay, so this was in Miami.
Yeah.
And remember that Dr. Ben Carson is the Secretary for Housing and Urban Development.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah.
And, of course, Alonzo Mourning is, of course, NBA star. And he straight up he was in a housing complex, public housing, and he's in an elevator going to talk to discuss the subject of low-income housing with Mourning, and he straight up just got stuck in the elevator.
Yeah, I guess it took him about 20, 30 minutes to get fire department and police there to help him get out.
Yeah.
and got a very, very real-life illustration of some of the problems.
Yeah. Now, everybody, I'm sure most of us has been stuck in an elevator at some point. It sucks.
Yes.
it's not a massive emergency because usually most of the systems are good enough now that they'll recognize pretty quickly if something's wrong.
Yeah.
But it is an inconvenience, and it does kind of suck.
Yeah. Seems like if there is a God, he is putting a lot of his attention to make sure Ben Carson gets made a fool of as often as possible.
I think he's just trying to get a message into his dumb head.
Well, he seems to not be getting it. We get to enjoy the fruits of that labor.
Yeah.
Seriously, Ben, Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, maybe he got some kind of lesson out of this.
Yeah.
We can hope.
I doubt it.
I
know there's a YouTube channel that specifically reviews elevators.
Yeah.
Like somehow manages to find lots of shitty elevators.
Yeah.
Just sort of like review.
I don't think I want to watch that. That's scary.
Oh, man. I bet there's some hotels out there that just love
There's
him.
Some that he visits, I think, like every 3 years and sort of reviews how much the problems do or don't get fixed.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the buttons are all messed up.
Yeah.
This one doesn't exist on this thing.
Mm-hmm. So, alright, so moving on from there. One of the things that President Trump has become infamous for is whenever a newspaper or a major publication does some sort of expose or big famous article criticizing him, he'll go on Twitter and rail against that that publication saying they're failing, they're losing money, nobody reads them anymore.
Hmm.
Ironically, however, a lot of those same newspapers and magazines have actually won several Pulitzer Prizes this year.
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
Yeah.
ProPublica, New York Daily News, the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
The Salt Lake Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
Got one for local reporting.
Yeah.
Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, The New Yorker, so on and so forth.
Yeah. One of the guys who won a Pulitzer won for his coverage over Trump's university scam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, he's still technically on trial for.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so obviously, and the weird thing is, a lot of these papers have actually seen a spike in sales.
Yeah.
Since all this shit went down. So, obviously they're doing something right.
Yeah.
Now, of course, they're not. Of course, there are some certain publications, cough, cough, the Wall Street Journal, cough, cough, who I am not particularly fond of. Obviously we all know about the bullshit that went down with PewDiePie. It was a horrible, tasteless joke, but honestly, I don't think he necessarily deserved all the shit that he got for it. He deserved some, definitely.
Yeah.
But, and then, of course, there's the stuff that went down with JonTron, and he deserved every bit of shit that he got for that one.
Yeah. And I think there's a direct comparison that can be made there.
Yeah.
Like,
PewDiePie was doing his as an off-color joke.
Yeah, it was probably self-aware.
Yeah, and it may have been extremely, and it may have been extremely tasteless, but
yeah.
It was meant to be a joke. It wasn't meant to actually hurt any feelings. Yeah. So the stuff JonTron said
jokes was all flat, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a good comedian, if they do something like that, that's off color and falls flat, they'll turn around and apologize, you know, and most people will move on. The shit that John said, he said 100% dead serious.
Yeah.
He wasn't joking about any of that shit.
And a lot of people sided with him, fellow YouTubers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The Wall Street Journal recently had that little expose where they showed that some major advertisers were having their advertisers show up on niche, like, neo-Nazi hate YouTube channels. And because of that, a bunch of the major advertisers have decided that they didn't want to do any more advertising for YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really hurt a lot of our favorite YouTubers now.
Yeah.
But anyway, oh, by the way, Wall Street Journal, also owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah. Wizard. Also a hater of Adblock.
Shocking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So. All right, so... Moving on, and this next story is really bizarre, and it's kind of convoluted, so you'll need to follow me on this. Okay, so X-Men Gold is one of the newer X-Men comics to come out from Marvel. It's this one in particular. It's being led by Kitty Pryde. Kitty Pryde is the leader of this particular team of X-Men. Obviously... because I'm pretty sure they're married, Colossus is also on this team as well. So this particular issue that we're talking about was drawn by a gentleman named from Indonesia named Ardian Siaf. Yeah, that's his name, Ardian Siaf. It was in, let's see, what issue was it in? It was the most recent issue that came out this week. And people, when they did a little look, including some Indonesian comics fans themselves, looked at some of this stuff, and they looked closely at some of the artwork, and they started to notice some things. So, one of the things they noticed is that Okay, so this is actually issue number one. So this series just premiered. And a couple of panels that featured Kitty Pryde addressing a crowd, they noticed that in the background, the numbers 212 and 51 were 212 was written on a storefront, 51 was written on a dude's shirt. And then there's one particular of Colossus when they're playing baseball, and there's the letters on his shirt are the letters QS and the numbers 5:51. Now, again, I remind you, Mr. Seoff is an Indonesian Muslim, and it was, in fact, Indonesian comics fans who pointed this shit out to Marvel. Because what this guy did is he put in coded Islamic extremist hate speech into this comic. And he's admitted as such after he was called out on it. So, explanation. 212 stands for the 2nd of December, specifically of last year. It refers to a large, massive protest against the governor of Jakarta, who is a Christian, over allegations of blasphemy regarding his use of the Quran in campaigning against opponents. And this march was organized in part with a group called the National Movement to Safeguard the Indonesian Ulema Council's fatwa. They're basically Islamic extremists. Hardline conservative. Shouting extremist slogans involving behead the blasphemers, that type of thing. Furthermore, the letter and number sequence QS 551 is a verse from the Quran, specifically from Al-Maida 551, which specifically states, and when translated to English says, "O you who have believed, do not take the Jews and the Christians as allies. They are, in fact, allies of one another. And whoever is an ally to them among you, then indeed he is one of them. Indeed, Allah guides not the wrongdoing people." This is a verse that Islamic extremists like to use to justify persecution of Christians and Jews. Even though if you know any more regular Muslims, they'll tell you that that is, in fact, very much against Islam, that as Muslims, they are obligated to protect, quote-unquote, people of the book, so, you know, Christians and Jews. So, basically, he put in some anti-Christian and anti-Semitic hate speech into this comic, which is all about, you know, tolerance and understanding. Keep in mind, Kitty Pryde herself is Jewish and was created by two Jewish comic book creators. The X-Men were created by two Jewish, you know, Stanley and Jack Kirby. Not sure about Claremont and Byrne, but, oh, by the way, this particular comic, the issue, it was written by Mark Guggenheim, who is also Jewish.
It's a great way to ensure you're not going to get any work with the biggest comic publisher in the world.
No, he's done. Sure, he just sank his career right there.
Yeah. I want to remind people, This was finally called out and brought to world attention thanks to the work of Indonesian Muslim comic book fans.
Yeah.
Remember, Indonesia is the most populous Muslim country in the world. The vast majority, well over 95% of their population are Muslim. So before anyone brings up that shit, like, of course he is. He's a Muslim. Remember, it was other Muslims who called him out on this shit.
Yeah.
This shit blew up all over the comic book world, and for good reason. This is awful.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what form hate speech comes in, it's still reprehensible. So.
Yeah. And I think a lot of those, because I hear this from like alt-right douchebags all the time. It doesn't matter what religion the hate speech is coming from. It's still hate speech.
Yeah.
You know, we defend Muslims because they're a religious minority, and because this is America, they have every right to practice their religion freely without any kind of you know, coercion or, you know, undue persecution. Now, I'm going to criticize Islam when I criticize Islam, because Islam, like all religion, is bullshit. And like all religions, it has things to criticize about. But I'm also an American.
Yeah.
So,
Ms. Marvel said they're going to issue, like, new versions of this comic or anything like that?
Probably. I would not be surprised they put out a second. They have. I don't know if anything officially has been said, but I really would not be surprised if they put out a second printing removing this shit.
Yeah.
So
probably it would replace anybody's comics.
Yeah. And keep in mind, you know, Marvel does own the artwork, so they can do with it as they please. So if they don't make a second printing, they'll probably touch up the artwork when the trade comes out. So. Yeah. Oh, God. It's just ugly.
Yeah.
Ugly, awful shit. All right. So we need to kind of motor through some of these. Burger King tried to do a new ad campaign where they basically hijacked people's Google Homes. And the internet got its revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this went about as well as you would expect it to when you're... Well, for one thing, it set off everybody's Google Homes, which is annoying. For one thing.
Yeah.
And then they had it basically reading off the first couple sentences of the Wikipedia article about what the Whopper burger was.
Which was edited by a Burger King marketing person the week before.
Yep. Yeah.
And then it was subsequently edited by everybody else as soon as the ad aired.
Now it's locked down because of the edit war that went on after this.
Yeah.
Then eventually Google updated so it didn't respond to this anymore. Thing.
No. Oh. Oh, that is so sweet. There's nothing like a big corporation that doesn't quite understand technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to
be clever and not quite thinking through the implications of what they were doing.
Yeah.
God.
All right. So, another news, a rapper from Australia named Tupac, who's from the Gold Coast.
Not Tupac.
Tupac.
Tupac. Yeah, that's what it says.
Terry Peck. Tupac.
Yeah. That is so goddamn stupid.
Well, everything else.
Oh, it gets worse.
Right from that.
Yeah, so he basically went to this restaurant, and he straight up dined and dashed. And then he tried to escape into the ocean and was eventually arrested by police on jet skis.
Yeah, $621 bill.
Mm-hmm.
What did he have?
Two lobsters. On jet skis and chasing his ass down, too.
Yeah, two lobsters, a baby octopus, 21 vodka oyster shots, and a number of Coronas.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. So
basically smashed.
Oh, yeah.
This is just.
I hope they caught some of that on video.
Oh, God. Probably Australian TV will have that. Right. We'll have that.
In other news, USA, Canada, and Mexico, Estados Unidos de Mexico, the United States of Mexico, that is what its proper name is, have all partnered up for a united bid for the 2025 World Cup.
2026.
Well, then get your cursor off of it. I can't read it. But yes. So for conspiracy-minded people, this is just one step closer to the North American Union.
Yeah.
For the record, I've said before, I would have no problem with the North American Union.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good idea to get the World Cup back over here.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I saw some stats on here that the most attended World Cup was actually in the United States, 1994.
Yep. Yeah.
3.6 million people, despite there being 12 less games than most others.
Yep. Mm. And
being held across three countries, though, that'd be a logistical nightmare.
I'd imagine they'd probably keep like one group plays in Mexico, one group plays in Canada.
Yeah.
Like the division is 60 games in the U.S., 10 in Mexico, 10 in Canada.
Yeah. I think some of this might in part be a response to the horrible shit that went down in Rio during the last World Cup.
Yeah.
That and probably what Qatar has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Where people are dying just building the stadium for their
thing. Yeah. Yeah, basically. So, anyway.
Over here, we got plenty of soccer stadiums you can use.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in exciting science news, this week NASA announced that they have discovered on one of Saturn's moon, which I believe is Enceladus.
Something like that, I guess.
Something like that. They have discovered the potential ingredients for life on that moon.
Good.
Which increases the chance that very soon we will discover that, no, we are in fact not alone in the universe.
No.
Now, granted, indeed, when we're talking about life, this could be everything from, microbes. You know, microbes to, like, straight up, you know, sea creatures. If we actually did find some sea creatures there, it would probably be something akin to, like, shit that we had, like, in the Cambrian Age or something.
Yeah, it wouldn't be as evolved yet, but...
Yeah, but...
Getting there.
Yeah, something akin to, like, trilobites or something.
But, I think there was a movie that was specifically about them finding life under the ice in Io, I think.
Yeah.
And it's, like, tentacle demon monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, so
yeah, they found hydrogen plumes.
Mm-hmm.
That essentially is similar to what we found in Io plus here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's, you know, so far away, there's a huge layer of ice about 5 kilometers
thick, yeah,
which is insanely thick.
Yeah, that's really thick.
You don't have to worry about falling through that.
Nope.
Right.
The satellite shots they have of that planet looks amazing.
Yeah.
Some of it straight up looks like they just took pictures at the Arctic Circle. Yeah, it really does. But
looks like
it
could easily be some like hand drawn shit.
Well, some of it probably. Some of it probably is because I know a lot of folks know this. When these satellites take pictures, the folks at NASA have to kind of touch them up.
Yeah.
Give them some color. Yeah.
As great as you'd like them to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for the, because, you know, these particular cameras, I'm not sure if they photograph in color.
I want to say they do.
They should.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, in entertainment news, the original writers for the early 80s Eddie Murphy classic Coming to America have announced that they're working on a sequel.
Yeah, they're planning for Eddie Murphy to be returning, but they haven't confirmed that yet.
Hmm.
Yeah, if he doesn't return for this project is dead in the water.
Yeah.
Because nobody else could do that.
Yeah.
It's Wesley Snipes' turn.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind him.
So, have you guys all seen it, Coming to America?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Oh, yeah. It's hysterical.
Yes, fuck you too.
It's a whole movie basically based around a character that Eddie Murphy did during his stand-up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so... cross your fingers and hope Eddie Murphy gets there. Because otherwise, this movie is just going to be shit.
Yeah, and if it's basically the same premise as the original, there's a whole lot more potential for just straight up what the fuck moments because of the world we're living in now.
Oh,
I wonder
if
it would be like his kid essentially comes to America.
Maybe.
And he plays the role of the father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if we, you know, you remember how the movie ended. So that's pretty much one of the best directions they could go in.
Yeah. Hopefully this will be better than all of Eddie Murphy's other recent movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he hasn't had a good run of luck lately.
No, most of his movies up to this point have been shit. In even more exciting Hollywood news, there is a new film spinning off from Jim Hansen's The Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Sadly, of course, you know who is no longer with us.
Yeah.
Both of them, Jim Henson and David Bowie.
Yeah.
But there's still plenty of places they can still go, so.
Yeah. The director they're supposedly going to have working on this is currently directing The Girl in the Spider's Web.
Mm-hmm.
A sort of follow up to the Lisbeth Salander movies and books.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of like the deal is he has to do that, and then he gets to do this.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, he needs to do that because those are good movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Finish those, please.
Yeah, that film is, say, casting and begin production this fall.
Yep. So, and finally, to wrap up this episode, we've got trailers. And the first trailer we're going to start off, of course, is the first big one that showed up this week. Thor Ragnarok.
Yep.
And it Ragnaroks.
It's like the first one that's going to be fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think the Thor movies kind of get a little bit of a bad rap because...
Yeah, I think they're good. There's just nothing like overwhelmingly like enjoyable about them.
There's not. They're fine movies. They're just not special. But this one looks like it will be very enjoyable.
Yeah, fucking Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum.
Mm-hmm. How could you go wrong?
And of course, Return of the Hulk returns. Yep. Hulk's back.
Which I guess is sort of like the Planet Hulk storyline coming into play.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, it actually looks like the shit. And I guess it looks like if the movie is as good as the trailer, Marvel's basically going to keep their winning streak.
Yeah.
At least in the movie department.
Yeah.
Because Iron Fist is...
not so good.
Yeah. Next up, we've got a trailer for the film Detroit.
Yes.
Catherine Bigelow's next movie.
Yeah.
It's about the riots in 1967.
Yeah.
Yes, the... Because Dr. King was killed in 68.
Yeah. That was in Tennessee.
Yeah, it was in Tennessee.
I know that because of the Stephen Lynch album I was listening to recently.
Yeah.
Because he makes a song about Tennessee and makes sure to mention that Martin Luther King was shot in Tennessee.
Yeah, so the riot they're referring to is the 12th Street riot. Basically, it was started after a police raid of an unlicensed after-hours bar. Basically, you know, they tried to get a bunch of drunk people after hours out of a bar, and that just never goes well.
No.
We all know.
The middle of the civil rights movement.
Yeah, that's the other thing. We are basically tits deep in the most heated parts of the American civil rights movement. You know, this is literally Dr. King and RFK would both die the next year.
Yeah.
John Boyega is starring in this.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like he's doing a really good job in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, this looks like it will be a very good movie.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
It's a story I don't think we hear much about.
Yeah.
History class or any of that.
Yeah, it's...
Which I saw on Twitter, like, a lot of people are mad, like, they should call this something else other than Detroit. Somehow it makes, like, it's going to undo all the progress they're making in Detroit, rebuilding that city.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Detroit still looks like a fucking third world country.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about
progress? And the movie's not going to undo anything.
No. It's not going to undo any of that.
It's called educational...
Seriously, there are still parts of Detroit right now that look like frickin' Bosnia after the Yugoslav wars.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, they got no room to talk.
No.
Yeah. But, of course, the big one, the bombshell, the one everybody was talking about that came out this week. Actually came out today, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier today.
Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
And,
they really didn't show much. I mean,
it was more of a teaser, but the thing is, this is Star Wars, so they basically could show, you know, Mark Hamill farting into a shot glass, and it would still get over 30 million hits on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's up to him right now.
I can't. I'm going to recuse myself, because this is like, don't want to see the trailer, don't want to go in with no spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
God, they even, all I will say, though, is they still pulled that stupid jump scare bullshit like they did with the teaser for Force Awakens.
Yeah, they did. I guess if something's working for them, I don't know.
Yeah. Sometimes maybe these people who cut these trailers together don't really have much imagination. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it, so I can't really say. But
yeah, they show a lot of the island that's in the end of The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like the big focus, but they also show a decent amount of other stuff. I won't spoil much there, but pretty much all the big names show up.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is unconscious for his like 2 or 3 seconds he's on screen
in
the trailer, but there's some good space stuff, and you get that little bit of intrigue, like, what is The Last Jedi referring to?
Yeah.
Which I've heard people sort of suggesting maybe they're getting away from the binary notion of just Sith versus Jedi.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's also said that maybe this is going to be Mark Hamill's last movie in the franchise.
Maybe. I mean, I'm sure he got a pretty good paycheck to not say anything in the last movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Star Wars. They could show like a black screen with Star Wars The Last Jedi on it for 35 seconds and it would still get 40 million views.
Yeah.
Have you seen the teaser poster they released?
Nope.
That looks really, really good. It's kind of an homage to like classic 70s sci-fi.
Yeah.
I'll put a link in the chat real quick.
Just a poster. It's a reference to the original 1977 poster for A New Hope.
Okay, well, if that's the direction that they're going to go, then I'm totally okay with that.
I really like just like the, cool. The bezel style of it, where it's the main image and it's just white all around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it's a really simplistic, minimalist image.
Yeah, very cool.
Well, folks, I do believe we have a show.
Yes, we do.
All right, so I would like to remind all of our listeners that if you would like to write into the show, ask us a question, or have something we want us to read on the air, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. As well as iTunes, you can also hear us on
keep forgetting these. Google Play, TuneIn, and your favorite podcast app of choice.
Yes. Also, as we mentioned earlier, Smashpad is now registered on, what was it, OpenCritic?
Yep.
So you'll be seeing us over there now.
Yeah.
We're moving up in the world.
Stuff is being posted. So.
Yay.
Good stuff.
So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Elogi, and Teresa Sammons, I would like to say, for the love of God, please don't launch missiles just yet.